For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
And welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of Pollock and Thurston. I am John Pollock, along with Brandon Thurston. And today, what a show we have for all of you. You know, Brandon, sometimes there are weeks where I sit down, I was like, what are our topics going to be this week? And I started jotting some topics down. There was actually quite a lot by the time I got to the end of this exhaustive list that I sent you. We will see how much of this list we navigate. But I promise, folks, we will get to Tony Hinchcliffe at some point on this show.
Oh, we will.
The only podcast this week that is going to cover both Tony Hinchcliffe, Luis Silberwasser, and Netflix data all in one compact hour, such as our show is going to do or attempt to do today. But how are you, Brandon? How is Buffalo?
It's good. The weather is pretty good today. I heard that there's a blizzard. Is Dynamite in Omaha tonight?
Omaha, Nebraska.
There's a blizzard there, according to Tony Khan. But the weather's pretty nice. Pretty nice out right now.
Okay, well, Nebraska was not spared, I guess. This very nice weather in Toronto, I can confirm. But yes, we have hours of AEW content tonight between Dynamite and then two editions of Collision that will be airing this Saturday and Sunday night after the NCAA tournament. Are you following along the NCAA men's tournament as it is March Madness time?
Not really. Is St. Bonaventure involved?
I don't think so, no.
Maybe they were in the NIT tournament. I don't know. But I do know that the ACC tournament wrapped up this past weekend and topped the cable charts for both Friday and Saturday.
Did it now. Okay. Yeah. Well, look at that. I cannot delve any expertise in basketball. If you want to chat a little Formula One, I'm all up to date on F1 after this season got started this past weekend. And you know what? Our comment from Luis Silberwasser.
Maybe I was going to say
a little bit about
speaking
F1.
Of Formula One.
We tie it all together.
There might be some new properties coming to Warner Brothers Discovery.
But where can one seek Drive to Survive content, Brandon? Where is the go-to place to follow this reality series that has led to this burgeoning success that is the F1 story?
That would be the winner of the streaming wars, the one and only winner, Netflix.
That is right. And man, how many people are watching WWE now that we have over 2 months to comb through all of these charts, all of this data? Brandon Thurston, spurred on, I think, by some speculation among analysts out there,
I would not say speculation. They said it pretty definitively.
Pretty definitively. We will get into this. There was a report from Puck that we will get into from John Orand, and then a response from Rich Greenfield of Lightshed Ventures. So we will talk about this and try and get to the core of how is WWE doing on Netflix, which is going to be the question that we ask on a weekly basis. So first of all, let's rewind to what John Orand had to write about. This was in his Varsity newsletter that you can find over at Puck. And this includes a paragraph here. Netflix's WWE bet. While Netflix holds the title belt for largest streamer, 300 million global subs, billions of dollars in net profits, its foray into weekly live sports content with WWE Raw is a painful reminder that even Netflix isn't always finding a Netflix-sized audience. According to Netflix data, global ratings for Raw have averaged just north of 3 million households, a notable drop-off from Raw's Netflix premiere of 4.9 million. Analysts may want to see stronger numbers out of Netflix, but WWE execs should be pleased with their audience growth. After all, it's roughly double the average audience that Raw had on USA Network in 2024. Still, it's another data point indicating that a larger platform doesn't automatically increase demand for a sport by an exorbitant multiple. Netflix's two Christmas games, one with a halftime show by Beyonce, averaged 26.5 million viewers, and goes on to state that Ted Sarandos suggested on the company's last earnings call that current Raw viewership is actually in line with internal modeling. Also, Netflix just announced that it sold out its title advertisements for the rest of Raw's season. So it could be the case that while Raw isn't a blockbuster success, it's also performing more or less as executives predicted. And it's a good reminder that Netflix has different goals than many of its linear competitors. It already has the scale. Now it needs eventized content that is attractive to advertisers. And then from Rich Greenfield on X wrote, odd attack on Netflix from Puck News. WWE Raw ratings are 2x linear TV, and yet its foray into weekly live sports content with Raw is a painful reminder that even Netflix isn't always finding a Netflix-sized audience. So a little analyst debate here among experts out in the field from Puck and Lightshed. But Brandon, first of all, I do find it like a common pattern that we are seeing comparisons of this Netflix global number to Raw's performance on the USA Network, which is obviously not a apples to apples comparison. And it's like we are, I think it's somewhat just viewed in this bubble that the US rights for Raw have gone to Netflix, and so have so many worldwide territories as well that are accounted into obviously this global viewership number.
So Raw on the USA Network before the new year was doing what? About 1.5 million viewers, sometimes more than that. There's so many great opportunities for confusion here. It's kind of understandable that there would be so much confusion. We were talking about viewers primarily in the past, basically always talking about viewers. Back in the Monday Night Wars, we were talking about household ratings, which is a totally different thing, but they're correlated anyway. You know, yesterday, actually, we got another update on what Raw is doing on Netflix. Of course, Raw is in the US and the rest of the world. The rest of the world has all of the WWE content in any case. We didn't get this past Monday's episode's rating, the one with the big John Cena promo, but we got the one from March 10th, 2 weeks ago. 3 million global views. Think of that as on average 3 million.
And this was the big Madison Square Garden show. This had Punk and Rollins yes. on it. So a higher than usual.
Mark Shapiro also.
Of course. Yes. The big draw to hook people in throughout the episode as well.
So this had 3 million. This is a typical rating for them. 3 million global views. Think of that as on average 3 million subscriber accounts were watching throughout the course, the duration of the program. That's double the US audience, right? That's double what they were doing on the USA Network. Simple as that.
Well, that would be a very, very simplistic comparison. Yes. 3 million to 1.5 million.
You in Canada, you never had access to watch Raw before. People in the UK, in Australia, in Brazil, around the world. This is their first
time.
We're
all just being introduced to this new Monday night institution.
Yes. No. So WWE has been distributed internationally for decades, in fact. We do know that the debut episode, now it is accurate to say that the debut episode did about double the normal audience, because Netflix did disclose the U.S. video amp measured, their third party analytics company that they're working with to measure Raw ratings. They did disclose that there were 2.6 million households watching that premiere episode on January 6th, which is basically double. And we do have the household data to compare that like to like to what Raw was doing in the past on USA Network. And that's like double what it's a little bit more than double what they were doing on the USA Network. And that was the highest rating you could find for Raw in terms of households since post WrestleMania 2018. So really big premiere. You can't, take anything away from the huge hype and huge audience that they had for the premiere relative to what their normal audience was on USA Network. Now, since then, if you just sort of do the math and say, let's assume that the global views, which were, you know, through 7 days, 5.9 million global views. Okay. Let's just do the math and say, let's assume that the US audience has declined to this, to a similar degree as the global audience. And then you get this chart that I've made here where you end up pretty much on par with what the USA Network audience is at this point. And in fact, you even had Mark Shapiro. We have the quote here. We had Mark Shapiro on the last TKO earnings call saying that they were up 13%, he said, at that point in Q1 versus the Q1 of last year against the USA Network. So he's not even saying that they're up 2x. You got the COO and basically the face of the company, corporately speaking, saying they're up 13%. My estimate does not find that, but it finds that some episodes are up year over year.
Yeah, and this is, I guess, how you can slice this up in so many different ways that, as Brandon mentioned, it leaves it for however you want to interpret. You can be very creative in how you interpret this, but just looking at if you are looking at this move to Netflix and maintaining your U.S. audience on Netflix, are you looking at that as a positive, given inevitably there's going to be a percentage of your cable viewership that does not have Netflix, that is not going to be signing up for Netflix, versus the expectation level, especially after week one, that there has been this drop off? They were not going to stay at week one levels, but
no.
I mean, do you look at this as like, is there cause for alarm? Is there cause for celebration? No. Or is this,
no. I mean, look,
the least sexy reaction that
they're continuing to rank well among Netflix content in general. They've been in the top 10 TV shows, English language, every single week since they've been on Netflix. Reportedly, according to Ad Age, or maybe it was Ad Weeks, there's some mainstream ad publications reported that they've sold out their inventory. So good for them. They've attracted a lot of advertisers who are interested in getting their products sold before raw content. So it's so easy, and we've seen this through a number of iterations of wrestling TV shows on different networks, whether it's Dynamite and its huge debut on TNT, by far the biggest rating it ever did. The SmackDown debut on Fox, by far the biggest rating it ever did on Fox. And it's going to come down from there, and you have this huge hype, and you're totally incentivized to have this very big audience off of the first, the debut episode, and it goes down drastically from there. I think this is fine. What did Lucas Shaw say? Is this a mild success, something to that effect? It's fine. And I think you probably are getting a different composition of age demographics here too, because you're on streaming, and naturally that lends itself to a younger audience, and traditional TV has aged like no other. It's, you know, the median audience for most of these wrestling programs on traditional TV was and is in the 50s.
Yeah, and it is interesting to look at, you know, this shift for WWE and this boom that it has undergone, where this show has gotten younger, and they have been able over these last 2 years to really solidify its 18 to 34 audience, its 18 to 49 audience, which were falling and falling for years, and propped up by that 50 plus audience that I would argue, had this been several years ago making this move to Netflix, it might have been a bigger loss of some of your core audience when this did not have kind of the buzz that WWE has brought with it to Netflix. It wasn't just an upgrade in platform and reach. They're also coming in at a time when the company is satisfying a large part of its fan base, and many of whom that you feel would be equipped with Netflix as well.
And if they were to do it, you know, a few years ago, well, Netflix was still building up subscribers, let's say a few years ago, but we really are at the point, and this is a relatively new development, we really are at the point where one streaming service, and only one streaming service, has a greater audience than the biggest cable networks in the United States, and that's Netflix. Netflix, you know, they don't break out U.S. from Canada. They report U.S. and Canada together, but if you just assume it's distributed by population, you've got probably well over 70 million subscribers, especially if you take things into account like password sharing and all that. You've got around 70 million subscribers. Let's you know, be conservative. And big time cable, including the USA Network, TNT, TBS, whatever you want, is probably around 65 million. And that disparity, of course, is only going to continue as cord cutting or cord nevering continues to happen. And I don't know that there's a lot more room for growth for Netflix. Maybe they'll shut down your password sharing, get your money out of you. But the distribution, just the reach, the number of households that you're in, yeah, it really is greater if you're on Netflix versus top cable, but not in the case of broadcast, as we've seen demonstrated, at least in the results of the NFL broadcasts that that Netflix has done, the results are kind of similar to when maybe ESPN airs a really big, you know, Christmas Day football game, for example. I don't know if the ESPN has, but it's similar to what a cable network can deliver with a really big NFL game. It's not similar yet to what a big broadcast network can deliver. And we've seen this in wrestling too, where, you know, SmackDown, very recent example. We've got all these great examples, you know, right here at our fingertips in the timeline that we're in right now, is where, you know, what SmackDown was doing, I think 2.2, maybe 2.3 million viewers on Fox at the very end. And now it's doing 1.5 million viewers on the USA Network, which is a pretty significant drop, but not that unexpected. And I think it just speaks to the power of Fox versus USA Network, same time slot and everything. It's a pretty straightforward example. And you're seeing NXT, despite its, you know, it's been on the rise last year against itself in the prior year on USA Network. Now it's on, CW, its a demo audience has pretty much plateaued, but they're gaining those 50 pluses probably, who have CW Network. You know, not even a very
high profile. And they don't have Netflix.
They don't have Netflix, and then not even a very high profile broadcast network in CW. But there's, you know, NXT, maybe it's sort of genuinely its popularity is still on the rise. But maybe it's the case too that a part of the factor is that you're just on a distribution platform that more your potential fans have access to.
Given that a number of the comparison point, I think will continue to come up to that week one number. And that was much like we saw when they moved to Fox in 2019, was that incredible first week number. And I don't know what is going to be that lightning in a bottle if they can capture that to ever approach that level. It's going to have to be something really seismic. And I don't think the Monday after WrestleMania is going to represent that, because I think we would have seen kind of after this John Cena story, like they have had some very big weeks in terms of hype and interest. But that first week, like the promotion was just incredible for that first week. And I think part of it was just the novelty of seeing what WWE would look like on this streamer. It is going to take something really, really significant, or just a growth in your audience to, I think, sniff that level that is going to be the high watermark for a period to come.
You know what's going to happen soon in April? I bet that the Raw on Netflix right after WrestleMania is going to do a really big audience, a lot bigger than usual, not just because it's after WrestleMania, but because, you know, what's going to happen in April, right?
Please tell me.
India is the Netflix content,
right?
Or the W content is moving from Sony or wherever it is now to Netflix. So, I mean, that's first,
yes.
That's perhaps by population the biggest audience for WWE. So it's going and that's just going to, if we're thinking only about popularity, going to artificially change what those numbers are. That number is going to be way up, and will be a great misleading story to tell. Not that the post-WrestleMania audience won't be increased. I'm sure it will be, but it's probably going to look much more increased than it would be, you know, in some genuine way, if we could perhaps, you know, if we have access to the ratings. And I don't know that WWE internally would have access to all of its international ratings to make a good like-to-like global comparison year over year or something like that. I don't know what their access is like to India ratings when WWE is airing in India or other international territories. But just suffice to say, it's going to totally disrupt and cause more problems for our understanding of these numbers, because there's going to be regions. There's, at least in this case, there's a very big region that's going to be added.
I will say for this move to Netflix and kind of getting as much clarity as we can to try and kind of see like the effects, the popularity level, I would say like WWE, you at least have a decent handle. It's not to the glory days of Showbuz Daily, but I think we certainly have a better view of how this move to Netflix has worked for WWE versus the question marks of AEW and what the impact of Max has been. I mean, we're kind of looking over to like other areas of, you know, how is this affecting attendance? How is this affecting their pay-per-view numbers? But right across the board, like in this streaming era, it is a level of unknowns for a lot of these key markers, and UFC being another one where if you just analyze their live event business, it's through the roof. But when you see, you know, New York Post reporting that their buys are down significantly on ESPN Plus, like that is nothing. We don't have any insight into that level of the business, and it's left to kind of analyze these other areas more prominently.
Well, I mean, if we're just thinking about the question of popularity and what is the public, how engaged is the public consciousness in WWE or AEW, I think the one reliable measure that we have over time is to look at these attendances for their weekly TV shows. And we're showing it in video right now. It's a line chart of Raw, SmackDown, Collision, and Dynamite. This house show number for WWE is becoming less meaningful as they run fewer house shows. But from 2021 onward, it's up and up for Raw and SmackDown, and it's mostly down and down for Dynamite and Collision. I think that is the most straightforward.
That is wild to look at April 2021 at the beginning of this chart to present day. Mm-hmm. Well, let us, anything else you wanted to share? Brandon does have a story up at patreon.com/WrestleNomics going further into the Netflix data that he has been charting and getting a reasonable estimate of the U.S. viewership. And, that's the headline. Stable.
Yeah, it's fine. It's good. It's probably a very different age composition, I bet. And that's probably accounting for some of it maybe being down. Although if you take Mark Shapiro at his word, it's up 13%, and he's got good reason to be truthful.
But you don't believe it's up 2x.
It's the debut. This premiere was up 2x. Yeah. It's now normalized back to about the level that it was at on the USA Network.
Moving on, we have an update regarding the Omari Palmer case. And this has actually been filed several weeks back, in fact. Omari Palmer, who had wrestled in WWE as Odyssey Jones, both in NXT and then being called up to the main roster and then was let go last September, he has filed a defamation lawsuit against his former partner, Maleth Nunez, alleging that she had made false statements, which led to his termination from the WWE. This was filed January 20th in Orange County, Florida, and he is accusing his former partner of libel and slander, claiming that she falsely alleged that he physically abused her, and thus he was dismissed by WWE. And Brandon, you have been digging into this case. You have spoken with both Nunez and have reached out to Omari Palmer. And this is sort of as this case had been coming through, Palmer had indicated his intentions to file suit. And he did, in fact, do so back in January.
Right. He had made public statements, I believe, on Twitter/X saying that there's going to be some legal action happening. And this is it. It's a fairly short complaint that we've read. It's at the state level in Orange County. We understand that Maleth Nunez does not live in Florida, or did previously, it appears, but does not currently live in Florida. So it's possible this could end up being a federal lawsuit, but we'll continue to follow it. He's alleging that she knowingly made false statements. She is standing by her story. In the case of Omari Palmer, somebody who's on television, he's on NXT a lot. He was on Raw towards the end before he was released.
A public figure.
Probably going to be considered a public figure, which means it's exceptionally hard to prove a case of defamation. You have to prove, you have an additional condition that you have to prove, which is actual malice, that the person actually knew what they were saying was false and did it, you know, with malicious intent. So that's what he's alleging. So we have some statements that Nunez gave to us as part of the story, where she said that this is yet another example of Mr. Palmer attempting to distort the truth in order to control the narrative and avoid accountability. The timing of the lawsuit suggests a clear retaliatory motive. Mr. Palmer never pursued legal actions against me until after he was terminated, which is, you know, the facts certainly line up with the notion that he filed an order of protection back in September, which is just after he was reportedly released. I believe Fightful breaking that story that he was released. He disappeared from TV conspicuously. He filed an order of protection against her, alleging that she had been stalking him and harassing him. He said in his petition, in these legal filings back in September, that he had filed a police report with the Maitland police saying that she was stalking him. We checked with the Maitland Police Department. They did not have a police report that reflected that. They only had one police report, which is the police report that was filed back in May of 2024 in which she alleges domestic violence against him. He denies it in the same police report.
And in that police report, it is mentioned that photos were taken as well.
Yes. Not just photos taken by her or showed the police, but photos taken by the police is yes. We don't have those photos. We haven't seen those photos, but they are referred to by the reporting officer as being taken by the police and submitted to the police department.
Yeah. And also from Brandon's story, in a statement to our outlet, Nunez reiterated her position denying Palmer's allegations, calling the lawsuit retaliatory. She said she intends to file counterclaims against Palmer for harassment and to pursue an order of protection against him. So we will continue to follow the story as it progresses. Let's stay on the legal front because there was an update in the AEW Tony Khan lawsuit, which was filed by Ryan Nemeth in his which if we do complaint of the year at the end of the year, this one might be.
We should do that. We should have
that might awards. Be the front runner. The Paul yeah. and Thurston Awards at the end. What is the latest here, and what are AEW and Tony Khan attempting to do with their petition that they filed?
I think if you listen to Paul and Thurston every week, you should get some college credits for now. We're getting into legal arbitration. What is everyone knows if you've been listening to this program for a while, what arbitration is, because we've got it now in three different cases. It's a subject of three different legal issues that we've been following.
Basically, if you have an issue with your company, we want to settle it without anyone yes. privy to any of
we don't want this in public court. Yes. So Ryan Nemeth filed a lawsuit in California state court in Los Angeles County at the state level. He signed a number of talent contracts, according to WWE. I don't know that that's really in dispute. He signed some talent contracts, and according to or did I say WWE? I mean AEW. And according to AEW, he's got an arbitration clause in his contract, just as in another case we're following, the Kevin Kelly and Tate Twins story. There's an arbitration clause in their contracts that says if you have any dispute, it's supposed to be resolved in arbitration with this firm called JAMS that handles arbitration. You're supposed to do that in Florida and not take things to public court where nasty people like us can report on it. So this is a new filing that's been filed in federal court. So this is actually, legally speaking, this is a separate case where AEW has now filed a petition. I don't know if you want to call this an additional lawsuit, but they filed a legal action. They filed a petition trying to force Ryan Nemeth to take his claim to arbitration. They're asking the judge to make this decision, to look at this contract and say, look, this has obviously got an arbitration clause in it. He's got a dispute with us that he's filing in California court. This should go to arbitration. That's what they're looking for the federal court to decide. Ryan Nemeth and his attorney will have an opportunity to respond to the petition. They have not done so yet.
Yes, and this being Ryan Nemeth in his complaint that it also outlined that he has been blackballed from
he's the been blackballed from professional wrestling, even though he has been appearing on TNA of late and has appeared for a number of independent promotions.
He's working against the Hardys next month on pay-per-view in Los Angeles.
Okay. And he's also, by the way, for people who don't remember, he's suing AEW, he's suing Tony Khan, he's suing one Phil Brooks, also known as CM Punk, as well as 20 John Does. He alleges that CM Punk and Tony Khan sort of conspired to blackball him from the industry, to prevent him from getting work, pushed him out of AEW. He alleges that he had this confrontation with Punk in an AEW locker room. He alleges assault against Punk. So that's all in the case. What else?
Well, I'm just going to say, like, I make light of this complaint because it's a ridiculously written complaint. That's not to say that Ryan Nemeth does not have a case of his treatment in AEW and specifically from Phil Brooks. I think just the way that this complaint was presented, I think he created way more obstacles for himself that is covered in, like, this guy does have legitimate complaints. There are also many illegitimate complaints, I would say, if you read this. I mean, it's just it reads for comedy from this screenshot right here on downward. I don't know how you can read this and take it seriously, and that's unfortunate because there are some serious complaints that he can allege.
There's a case here that he outlines about how he was going to an event. He was not booked on an event. He made this tweet in reference, apparently, to CM Punk. He went to an AEW event in Greensboro. He's about to go to the event, the arena, to work. And he believes that Punk contacted another AEW official and got him sent home. So he's got some things to complain about here. There's also some ridiculous things in this complaint as well, and some incorrect dates, et cetera. Punk is not a party to this petition, which is natural, given that, you know, he, although he was an employee with the company, he's not, he's certainly not affiliated with AW at this point. So it's not surprising that he's not a party to the petition, which is in federal court. And remember, the lawsuit itself by Nemeth is in California court.
Even though both of their companies are on paper affiliated now between WWE and TNA.
Right. Yes. Well, they have a partnership. Yeah.
There's a partnership. There's a, you know, if you were going to do the extended WWE family get together, I mean, at the independent contractor Christmas party, they both could, in theory, be invited to said Christmas party.
Yeah, it's, there should possible. Be an independent contractor Christmas party. I like that.
Yeah, it would probably be a BYOB.
Everyone can gather around with their 1099s and exchange tax forms and things like that. Yeah.
This past Sunday, very unfortunate story coming out of a show in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey, where independent wrestler Vince Steele died. He was set to have a four-way match, and it was stopped when he was going through a cardiac event, and he ended up passing away. And after this, I did reach out and spoke with the police chief at the Ridgefield Park Police Department, who gave me some additional details that the officers received. They were dispatched after a medical call, and once they reached there, he was suffering from a heart attack, and they performed CPR on him. They used a defibrillator, and an ambulance was dispatched from a local hospital, and that's where Vince Steele was transported. And we did not get the exact time of death, when he passed, but BodySlam.net had also reported on this, and they had conveyed through one witness that was at the event that it had taken around 45 minutes for the ambulance to arrive. New Jersey is not a state where you are overseen by any athletic commission, and therefore you wouldn't have had an ambulance on site, for instance, like you would have to do in the state of New York. But we were not able to confirm how long it took for the ambulance to get there. But it is a chance, Brendan, to look at just sort of, you know, some of these independent wrestling shows, and every so often we talk about sort of the safety procedures that are in place, and typically athletic commission involvement, it can involve a lot of arduous costs that are attached, and it's very costly to have an ambulance on site. And if one is not mandatory, it's not like the promotion is in the wrong here. But there is like this 1 in 1,000 chance that something like this happens. And again, it's not to say that that would have been the difference here of this performer living or not. But it's kind of an unfortunate situation that we do look at for independent wrestlers. And when there is an emergency of, you know, the role that athletic commissions or oversight should have or not have when it comes to independent wrestling at this level.
Yeah, and I understand he was only 39. So
yes,
it's the same age that I am. So it's a terrible story. I think he did he wrestle some of his time. I'm going to look up his cage match, but did he wrestle in New York? The point that I can bring up is that if this were in New York, what New York does and what New York has always done, as long as I had been wrestling there, is that they would take your blood pressure, which. Who knows if that would have even prevented him from wrestling, but like the notion is that the doctor, one of the things that the doctor is supposed to be there, who's mandated to be there by the New York State Athletic Commission, they're supposed to take your blood pressure and determine whether you're healthy enough to wrestle, or whether you're at risk for, you know, potential heart attack or something like that. EMTs in New York, and we're talking, this was in New Jersey, but EMTs in New York is relatively new within the last, I don't know, 8 years or so. It reminds me of a show that I was on, I think in 2012, locally, where a wrestler did a 630 off the top rope. It was in a battle royal and suffered a really serious spinal cord injury, as it turned out. I think the battle royal completed with him on the floor. And an ambulance was called. You know, the doctor, I think, checked on him, but decided that it was best to call an ambulance. And it did take the ambulance a while to like open up the guardrails and things like that. So, and this is before the EMT was required and the ambulance was required to be on site. It does look like he wrestled a lot in Illinois, in New Jersey,
A lot. He had been wrestling for a long time. I think his cage match goes back to like 07 or so. Like he had been, you know. Do you ever recall any instance in your independent career of somebody that was not cleared to wrestle from like any kind of pre-match evaluation? Does anything come to mind?
No. What I do remember is a wrestler having high blood pressure and being told to go try to calm down, because wrestlers are naturally nervous often before they wrestle. Yeah. I remember some situations like that. I don't recall if it ever actually prevented somebody from being in the ring. It might have, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's an unfortunate situation, and I don't think there's an easy answer here. You're talking about shows that run on just shoestring budgets and ones that do not have that oversight. And it's like the idea of having these additional safety protocols. Of course, when you see the dire situation or an example like this, of course, it's a cause for pause, but it's also one where I don't know if you're necessarily going to see any kind of a change to this. And it's just an unfortunate situation that you ask, like, if you could have had any kind of preventive measures of should he have been in the ring that particular day. It's a question kind of left unanswered, at least at this juncture.
Yeah.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Let's go back to TNT Sports. And over the past week, Luis Silberwasser, who is the head of TNT Sports, he was on John Oran's podcast, The Varsity. And let's hear Luis Silberwasser when he is asked about the network in its post-NBA world, its interest in Formula One and the UFC.
Like both, I think they are in conversations with their current partners. But we like both. You know, we know combat sports is an area that we don't have. You know, AEW, it's not combat sports. It's sort of a hybrid between sort of entertainment and sports. So we don't consider that sort of a 100% sports. So combat sports is something like UFC, which is a fantastic property. And yeah, it is something that has perked our interest. And the other one, Formula One as well. You know, we given our experience with sports internationally, we know the passion for Formula One. And we know that in this market, it has grown and it has great potential as well. So, but again, I think we will continue to be disciplined and strategic about it. And, you know, it has to sort of meet those objectives that we want. It has to be able for us to offer us value from a distribution perspective, from a max perspective, and generate the scale that we need to be able to monetize. We like both. I think
that's enough of Luis Silberwasser. Thank you very much. And when I put this quote out, Brandon, did people fixate on the line, "We're very interested in UFC," or did they focus on AEW is not 100% combat sports?
What does this mean for AEW?
Exactly.
What does this mean for AEW's future?
Yes. And is it not 100% combat sports? Is this guy a wrestling hater?
Well, he doesn't oversee AEW. I mean, this is true.
No.
That AEW is not categorized with sports. And I don't think Mr. Silberwasser oversees AEW. Maybe he's involved in it in some, you know, tangential capacity, but it's, you know, Channing Dungey oversees entertainment, and that's where AEW is classified. I think part of that, I would like to know whether part of that strategy by networks, and I believe this has been done for WWE with its network partners over the years, is that I wonder if they would prefer to put them in entertainment where that content is cheaper, at least by the hour, versus sports, where live sports are, you know, notably very expensive. So I wonder if that's part of the thought there, but it is obviously professional wrestling, I've heard, is a work.
Just don't say that if you're interviewed ringside on AEW pay-per-view and you're promoting a film.
Yes, I've heard about that. We should be careful about using certain wrestling terminology on this program as well. I think there is, you know, some thought about like, well, what would the time slots be that if they were to get, you know, Formula One content or UFC content, what are the time slots that those would occupy? Pay-per-view prelims would probably occupy Saturday nights if they got those, right? And they do, in fact.
I mean, really any UFC content, you're looking at Saturday night. That would have the direct impact on Collision. Formula One, I mean, you're talking about like off hours, like super early Sunday morning.
Those are in all different countries.
Sunday afternoons. Yeah. I mean, you're looking at predominantly like three quarters of your races that are happening overseas and ones that are... The difficulty they're having with Formula One is that a lot of the hardcore Formula One fans, they've been brought up on watching these races that are commercial free. And it's like here in Canada, at least, and I don't know how this exists elsewhere. You do have like the picture in picture component, but it's, and it's also not, you're not airing it necessarily in prime time, but for UFC, I mean, you're talking about, I would look at TNT Sports as sort of a left field option that they could end up on. I don't know how realistic it is that they could land them, but
it'd be surprising if ESPN did not retain a lot of it.
Yes. Even with all the public troubles that appear to be showcased between these sides. But what TNT does have is a lot of excess cash that they are not spending on the NBA. And they certainly could be a player at the table. It's more so looking at it from TKO side of the strategic nature of working with a TNT when I think everyone knows that an ESPN is interested. Everyone knows that a Netflix is going to be intrigued. Amazon has stated upfront publicly they have an interest in it. And this would be another suitor that would at least be interesting, that at the very least you're looking at your bargaining power increasing when these players are all looking at the UFC, because there aren't a whole lot of other rights that are out there beyond these two.
Yeah. If you want an AEW Doom, the thing that I've been thinking about is there just has to be other content that's at least as popular. And in fact, if it's any other sport, it can be maybe even a little bit less popular. I mean, look at the NHL pushed to Diamond out of its TNT slot. There just has to be content that ranks more highly or almost as highly that they can extract better ad value out of, which will be just about any sport, but it has to be pretty close in terms of viewership. Like the 3-on-3 unrivaled, 3-on-3 women's basketball that WBD does have rights to, but that's not doing, in what I've seen, I don't think hasn't been doing the ratings that are really comparable to AEW at this point. We'll see what happens. You know, as you mentioned, they've got no more, well, not a lot of NBA money that they had to spend towards NBA. So they do have a lot of free money to get new properties to replace it, to uphold their carriage fees and so forth. Maybe we'll see one day, maybe if they get some UFC content, maybe that there's more opportunities for AEW and UFC crossover.
I think natural. I mean, just the shoulder program idea. Maybe Dana White and Friends could be your spinoff series, a reality show where Dana White and all of his friends that he hangs out with can all be featured.
Dan Lambert, Junior Dos Santos, get all those folks back. Ronda Rousey, right? She dabbled in some Ring of Honor. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that there's a great opportunity for that. I mean, look at what Power Slap did, right? Had the lead in from AEW and didn't do the best ratings in
now,
AEW.
Now so, YouTube's own Power Slap.
Is it Rumble or is it just YouTube?
It's left YouTube. It's left Rumble for YouTube.
Okay.
So.
Well, congratulations to them.
Bigger and better than ever, Power Slap. Brandon, if I ask you, who owns TKO? Is this an easy question to answer in light of all of the recent shuffling that has taken place under, and what is under the TKO umbrella at this point? How much more stuff can they fit in here? For all you PBR fans out there, I mean, can you give us a breakdown of TKO's ownership structure?
There are a growing number of things under the TKO umbrella.
This is quite WWE. This is quite the chart, quite the pie chart we have here.
Yes, so there's WWE. This pie chart isn't illustrating what's in TKO, but we all know it's WWE, it's UFC, but now it's also Professional Bull Riders. It's also On Location, which is Endeavor's luxury, you know, VIP event travel packages, as well as IMG, which is do you know what IMG is? It's an agency, sports talent agency, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So that means, so those assets came out of Endeavor, just like UFC came out of Endeavor, and they've been glommed onto the TKO merged company that also involves WWE. And that means that, basically the long short of it is that Endeavor now owns a greater majority of TKO. They went from something like 53% before this transaction was completed recently, and now it's about 61%. So that does diminish the percentage that one Vince McMahon. Yes, Vince McMahon still owns a pretty significant.
No. He divested all of his shares. He's completely divested. He's gone.
You watched the Mr. McMahon Netflix documentary, didn't you? Where they said that he's all gone. He sold all of it.
That's what they told me.
He listed it for sale. He has not sold some 4 million shares, I believe is the number. Anyway, it's about 4% of the company at this point. He had just under 5%. Now he's got just over 4%. He's still got, you know, this is his shares that he still had got are worth, I believe, over $1 billion, even as the market has taken a hit lately. He's still got $1 billion in TKO stock. Not to mention, yes, he did sell a lot of stock, but he didn't sell all of it. I know that's a hard thing to understand. He sold some of it, but not all of it. He did liquidate over $1 billion, and he got some pretty hefty payments too as part of this merger being completed back in 2023. In any case, he owns 4% of the company. People like Stephanie McMahon, last we knew, she's now got just under 1% if she hasn't made any transactions since the last disclosure. Linda owns like 0.3%. These people have got pretty small percentages of this growing and extremely valuable company that's worth, I don't know what their market cap is. It's several billion.
Yes. I don't know how much it rings a bell of the 0.16% boss, Dwayne Johnson.
Yes. He's got I forget what the amount is, something like $60 million worth of stock is what he's got. And he's got more coming to him over time as these shares vest as part of his deal for being a board member.
Yes. And Vanguard, 3.32%, not to be confused with Matt Hardy's drone as well.
$25 million in market capital is what TKO is worth as of this moment.
Well, we glossed over Vince McMahon, who slowly but surely getting out and about on the city after taking in the Super Bowl. He's obviously become enamored with live sports. And look at that. He secured front row seats to the Knicks Miami Heat game at Madison Square Garden this past Monday, 1 week after WWE was playing. Maybe he got his Mondays mixed up. Maybe he was supposed to be going to see Punk and Rollins in their cage match. But I think he did have the date right because, boy, did he get the memo that it was St. Patrick's Day. I mean, what is that? That shirt it speaks volumes. Loud as one can imagine with his some hair dye going on here. Interesting look here for Vince.
As we saw the Super Bowl, the mustache is gone.
That's right.
This was on ESPN. I understand this game. We were discussing this yesterday. I don't know if this actually appeared on the ESPN broadcast because there's in one of the screenshots that's out there, this looks like it was on some sort of FanDuel broadcast. Anyway, okay. I don't know if this is on US TV or not, but he was clearly there at the Garden. Of course, he was at the Garden looking a lot like Vince Sr., I think.
Very much so. And you know, if this had shown up on the big screen, he would have shuddered at that middle word in terms of identifying him.
Yes.
Former Junior. What? Promoter?
Former. Former yes. Wrestling promoter.
So there you have it. Vince McMahon, if you're wondering what he is up to, it was a Knicks Miami Heat game this past week. Coming up, WrestleMania weekend. We're a month away from 10,000 events occurring under the TKO banner in Las Vegas over the weekend, and they have announced several other shows. So they have this relationship with Fontainebleau, which is the official host hotel of WWE that weekend. They had previously announced that they would be having the Hall of Fame here. They're going to be doing several events that weekend. They have added an Undertaker talk show on Saturday night, the best come down after taking in a whole day's worth of wrestling from Stand and Deliver and Night One of WrestleMania. They will be doing NXT on the Tuesday after WrestleMania weekend from this location, and added Sunday night after Night Two of WrestleMania. Forget the press conference. Everyone is going to be heading to see the roast of WrestleMania featuring noted Puerto Rican ambassador Tony Hinchcliffe.
Who is Tony Hinchcliffe? What would one know him from?
They would probably know him from the Trump rally at Madison Square Garden, bringing everything together from our last topic. Tony Hinchcliffe, who is probably one of the most popular comedians at the in the current zeitgeist. Yes, he will be joined by, who do we have listed here? Sami Zayn, The Miz, Braun Strowman, and Paul Heyman, who have to work WrestleMania.
Why do you keep forcing us to talk about politics on this show? Haven't we said there's no more politics in wrestling?
You know what? Trump will fix it. Yeah, Trump fans, 2024. Yes, Tony Hinchcliffe, who, was the lightning rod for about 10 minutes after this this press conference. But then people realized, you know what? We're totally cool with this. So yes, this will be most notably not being recorded. This will not be broadcast, and I would imagine that the same.
Why would they not want to broadcast this?
I have no idea why they wouldn't want to broadcast this.
They could stream it on YouTube, like they streamed the power slap.
You know what they're doing? They're against freedom of speech. This is the anti freedom of speech company.
Are they censoring Tony Hinchcliffe?
They are censoring him. Yeah, it's funny how these things work in reverse. So I have gone to I went to the Sami Zayn comedy show in Cleveland last year, and I imagine it's going to be
censored.
Yeah, and I have heard the same for all the Undertaker shows. Like, they will you literally have to hand over your phone. It's put in a sealed bag,
like,
and you
don't get it till
after the show. Yeah. So, Brandon, there is a chance you might attend this.
Who knows?
Possible.
Anything can happen in the World Wrestling Federation. We'll see.
Okay. Well, we will see. I'm sure there will be plenty of talk coming out of this one. The roast of WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm. How active is the indie, the indie scene in Las Vegas WrestleMania weekend? Is there much going on?
There's a fair amount. It's mainly contained to the kind of the collective series of shows that Game Changer is putting on. Though Game Changer is actively working with WWE. They're going to be doing a tournament along with Future Stars of Wrestling featuring the opening round of the WWE ID Championship Tournament. Can you imagine being the WWE ID champion?
That would be a great allocate.
What a distinction. Yeah, but I mean, it's certainly, I think the WrestleMania weekend in terms of just proliferation of shows peaked before the pandemic. And while it's still a pretty busy weekend, you could still do a ton WrestleMania weekend that is not WWE related, but it is very noticeable how much more WWE has commanded just a concentration of everything that is happening. From, like, if you are an independent fan, it's like, here, we are going to be partnering up with GCW and Future Stars of Wrestling. And we've got non-wrestling events, like we just went over. And there's just nonstop WWE events
There's no Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor.
No Supercard of Honor this year, which would be a first for them in forever.
And not going to be somewhere else around the same time either, right? There's no date announced for that, correct?
They've announced nothing, so I mean, we're 4 weeks away. I would think that if they were going to do this, you would have heard an announcement by now, which is just our luck that Tony will tweet something. But no, it does not appear that they are going to be venturing. And they're not even running Las Vegas. They're staying away from Double or Nothing the next month rather than going back to Vegas. So, yeah, this is very much a WWE-centric WrestleMania weekend. Also added from WWE, they have announced Backlash for May 10th at the Enterprise Center in St. Louis, which will be 3 weeks after WrestleMania, as well as the Road to Clash in Paris at the end of August, which will lead into two nights in Paris for Clash in Paris, followed by Raw in Paris. So they will be doing a live SmackDown in Dublin on August 22nd, then live events in Liverpool and Newcastle, Raw in Birmingham, and then live events in Manchester, Leeds, and Cardiff, Wales, followed by a SmackDown in Lyon, France, which they ran a PLE in last year. So more European
rate John's pronunciation of those towns in the comments below.
Yeah, please correct me at your convenience. But yes, more European shows, as the WWE house show market, it's thriving. It's just across the ocean.
Yes. And the Backlash announcement, I was taking a close look at the press release. I don't see any sports commission or any sort of government entity here. St. Louis, kind of a biggish market. No obvious signs of a site fee is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's money left on the table then. Mark Shapiro did not do his job here then, if we don't have the St. Louis municipality kicking in some dollars here. This is Backlash. Backlash St. Louis, no less. They're promoting the town in the title itself. Also coming back on Tuesday night, it's the return of Dark Side of the Ring. So these are our topics that we have this season, Brandon. It's going to kick off with Hell in a Cell, Mick Foley versus The Undertaker, The Sheik, Ed Farhat, Tony Atlas, Muhammad Hassan, Eddie Gilbert, Vader, Daphne, superstar Billy Graham, Ludwig Borga, and Billy Jack Haynes, who is still incarcerated in prison. Yes. And I can confirm they interviewed Billy Jack Haynes while in prison. So this should be, that will probably be a totally insane episode. I think there's a number of episodes here that are going to be I think the Ludwig Borga one will also be.
I think that'll surprise some people, some facts that people may not be aware of about Ludwig Borga.
Yes. If all you're familiar with him is either pinning Tatanka with a finger or the SS tattoo that he sported, go take a peruse of his Wikipedia page and you will realize you could probably do a season on Ludwig Borga. This guy had a life that we can say. Died in 2010. Yes. And
a politician, athlete, author,
singer. allegedly was a supposed to have a small role in Titanic, but his schedule prevented that.
Yeah.
Quite an interesting life that this man had. So there you go. That's Dark Side of the Ring coming up. And that brings an end to our show, Brandon. We got through all of it.
We mentioned the notion of, I actually should have brought this up when we were talking UFC. Dana White is on the Meta board with his friend, Mark Zuckerberg. And there's the notion has been raised. Was it in the Varsity newsletter? The notion was raised of maybe Meta/Facebook would bid or get some sort of rights. They've already got the with the VR rights with their Quest headset.
Yes.
Have you ever used a Meta platform on your television?
Never. No.
No. I don't think they're a serious player for UFC rights. Not to mention with Dana being a board member, just the shareholder litigation that would invite.
Well, I don't know if they are willing to jump into the world of Meta, but I don't. There are probably numerous possibilities at whatever this UFC.
Yeah, maybe some small rights, like they've got the VR rights. Maybe there's something, but I don't see any serious content rights there.
Maybe they'll just put a headset on Mark Zuckerberg. He can be cage side. You can watch from Mark Zuckerberg's perspective, from him and his gold chain, and see what
maybe you just have a camera dedicated to Mark Zuckerberg wearing a Quest headset. Watching,
yeah, or maybe from the perspective of Dana White and what,
or Donald Trump. I mean, that would draw on the viewers.
Yeah, what problematic personalities is Dana White welcoming at UFC events? That could be a special add-on for the Meta experience. Well, there you go, everybody. That is the world of professional wrestling, all condensed into 55 minutes or so. Brandon has a report, as we mentioned, on the Netflix U.S. viewership. So if you want to dive into all of that, you can do so. Once again, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. I am back tonight with Wei Ting. We are going to be live postwrestlingcafe.com immediately after AEW Dynamite from the blizzard-infused Omaha, Nebraska. So we will see who makes it to Dynamite and Collision tonight. So lots coming up, and of course, you can follow along postwrestling.com. We have stories there daily, especially a lot of great analysis and reporting from the one and only Brandon Thurston. So check out all of that.
The Patreon is patreon.com/WrestleNomics, and Post Wrestling has recommended us. Look at that.
We have. We give them our complete recommendation. And do alert people. Substack. Where can people follow Brandon Thurston on Substack?
WrestleNomics.substack.com. Most of the same content. Patreon remains the best place to subscribe to everything for $5 a month.
Yeah. Or you can just comment on X to any of Brandon's tweets.
Getting pretty difficult to do that these days.
Yeah. Well, Brandon loves interaction, especially when people misinterpret what he has written, or you just go based on a headline too. That's fine too.
Yeah.
Perhaps a tutorial coming soon as well. If Brandon's going to describe what he does for a living and explain it to people in plain English as well.
Yes.
All right. That is it, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. We will be back next Wednesday, as always, 1 p.m. Eastern time. Hit subscribe, and we will chat with you next week.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.